Now's the time to meditate and become really still. So to do this, we have to let go of all the busyness of our life. Doesn't matter what you've been doing, where you come from, how much you have done. You've arrived here. And this place is a place where we stop. We stop in this moment, in this present, and learn not to go anywhere, but to be here. So with your eyes closed, just remember where you are. In this city, in this suburb, in this hall, on this spot, at this time, you've arrived. In the here and now. Once you have this first awareness of the present moment, you can become aware of your body and how it feels. In particular, how it's sitting. Can you improve your posture by making it more comfortable? If you can, do so. Meditation is driven by the combination of awareness with kindness. Being aware and responding with compassion. First of all, to your body. With awareness and kindness, sometimes you can locate areas of tension in the body. Whether it might be in your intestines because of indigestion, in your legs because of bad posture, or wherever. And just being aware of that area of tightness or pain, and sending it kindness. It has the same effect that when you were a child, or your mother stroked the pain away, when she smiled, and her kindness lifted the tightness and tension. So give your body a smile of kindness. And notice it relax. Open out and become at ease. And just linger with your body a little bit. Sometimes it needs a lot of kindness, of quality time with the feelings in your body. And relaxing those feelings. once the body is nicely relaxed, bring your attention even more closely into this moment by letting go of all of the past and all of your future. Whatever's happened is just dead, it's gone, it's finished. And lingering on the past means you're blocking the happiness and wisdom which lies in the present. And running off into the future with all your plans and your fears again is neglecting the place where your future is made now. This is the most important time in your life now. So in this stage in the meditation, we deliberately put priority on settling the mind in the present. If you notice it wanting to go off and worry and plan about what you're going to do next, stop it and gently bring it back into the present. If you're still lingering on what happened before, give that away and come into the now. You deserve peace. Grant yourself this moment and you'll find all the peace you ever wanted. Just being in this moment. Right in the center of this moment, you'll find this quiet place, a place where words don't belong, the silence of the mind. See if you can just rest the mind in that silence, in the center of now. So you don't need to think, you just know without giving it a name. silent awareness of now. If you wish to focus on your breathing, just know the breath as it comes in. Know it as it goes out, as full as you possibly can. By filling the mind with the feeling of breath, gentle, unforced, it helps to keep the other stray thoughts, to keep the past and the future out of your mind, and instead to keep peace and silence with the breath. embracing this moment, embracing the breath. Open the door of your heart with no conditions, with no demands, not wanting anything, and then you can stay here. Just being here, settling in, in all the race to go places, to get places. This is where that race stops. This is where you park your mind. You find you always had peace, only you're always running away from this. Stop running. Be still. And know peace. How do you feel now? It's close to the end of the meditation, unfortunately. What's it like inside of you? The more you are still, the more you can taste the bliss of peace. You don't need much to be at peace. In fact, you don't need anything at all. You don't have to be intelligent or smart. You just need to be, with no adjective added. I'm going to be ringing the gong 3 times. Just wait and be patient. It's only 3 chime lengths of time to go. Listen and drink every sound from the gong. And only when the last sound fades away, only then open your eyes. Many of you will know, or at least you'll hear afterwards in the announcement, that tomorrow we have what's called a Katina ceremony at the Nuns' Monastery, Dharmasara in Gijiganup, and the day afterwards on Sunday, a Katina ceremony at Bodhinyana Monastery. And traditionally those have been the days, especially when I was a young monk, when the monastery would get the most donations and generosity from our lay supporters. Traditionally a time when people show their gratitude towards the two sanghas. And not only that, but I was listening or looking at a video of people who recalled their near-death experiences and just the spiritual power of generosity, of kindness. In fact, we've got a special name for it in Buddhism. It's called dana. And there's something I'd like to explain about that dana, that generosity. And sometimes I must admit that I feel a bit reticent about talking about generosity, because I just don't want to do any hard sell ever, because that is destroying the beauty of what this generosity really means. And the times when I've seen this act of dana and kindness in its purest form has been some of the most inspiring moments of my life. And it's that inspiration, that beauty of what generosity really means, what it is from the heart when a person just abandons what they have for something else which is bigger and greater and more beautiful. I know out there in the world it's sometimes a dog-eat-dog world, but out here in these temples, in these monasteries, in these places, this doesn't go in the way of the world. We don't follow the same rules here. It's fascinating that the rules of a monk, because I live in the heart of Buddhism as a monk, the way we think, the way we do things is just totally alien to the way other people do things in life. An example of that is, just today I had a little win with the immigration department in Australia, because we had some trouble with getting visas for monks to come to Australia, and for nuns as well, because part of the requirement for the religious worker visa was that the sponsoring organisation, in this case the Buddhist Society of Western Australia, pays the monks and nuns an adequate salary. And Mr. President, you don't pay an adequate salary at all. We don't expect you to. That's not what I'm a monk for. But to get that into the legislation, or at least the policy documents of the immigration department, because when we actually tell them how much, like a monk or a nun at my monastery or Dhammasara, how much we're getting, you know, from Buddhist society, they charge, my goodness, you're being exploited. You only get one meal a day? You have to sleep on the floor? They don't even give you a bed to sleep on? No superannuation? No health care? We say, we want it that way. We like it that way, because that's what it's like to be a monk. And just today we finally got the letter to say, as long as that all the monks and nuns, the Buddhist monks and nuns, are being treated equally, and anyone who comes from overseas is not being given less than you are, Ajahn Pram, then we can accept them for their visa. And when I was talking just 3 months ago to the Minister of Immigration, Chris Evans, he was laughing when he says that. I think every monk who comes to Australia, or nun as well, will be allowed in, because I don't think we can even contemplate anyone getting less than you. So at last we're getting some people to understand what monks and nuns are about, what Buddhism is about, this beautiful sharing we just give. Recently, we had a retreat at Jhana Grove. It was an insight retreat. And you know that during that retreat, it's still our meditation retreat center, it's still getting some bugs in the system. And so they were ringing me up and saying electricity's off. So it came on again afterwards. Or the water's run out. Or one day they were saying, you know, the sink in the men's toilet isn't flushing. I said, okay, I'll come along and fix it. So this is my retreat, my range retreat. So there I was there in the male toilet, sort of really dirty and wet, digging out the sand from the trap under the concrete for a couple of hours. And these meditators were coming up and said, what are you doing that for, Ajahn Brahm? And that's a wonderful question. What was I doing that for? I was an abbot, a teacher, this was my retreat. And there I was, cleaning out the toilets so 60 other people could have a wonderful retreat. And I thought, I'm doing dana. This is what I'm supposed to do. This is what I love doing. This is what I would always do. If I had the time and it wasn't so far away, I'd come and unblock your toilets for you as well. Not for payment. Just doing it for the love of doing something. And I noticed that this was an act of kindness and generosity, and I hope that people get that message, that we help each other and share whatever we have. So when we think like that, the whole idea of what can you get out of this Buddhist society? When you go on a retreat, how many days can you spend there with paying the very least? And I mention this because also, you know those calendars which we have on sale for $10? And how much they cost? They cost $7 to produce. And, you know, our Vice President Ming, she organized this all for, you know, giving her time. So when we first had them in our monastery down at Serpentine during the rains, you know, monks, we're not into business, so we don't know how it works. So what we put on there, so suggested donation, $10. So people put $5 in. And I thought, oh, come on, you guys, don't you get it? Suggestion is not mean you give less, mean you give more. Because what are you doing this for? This is for your temples. That actually is going for a nun's monastery. Have you ever been to our nun's monastery down in Kijiganov? If you haven't, go tomorrow and have a look at it. Do you know how that monastery started? This is a beautiful act of generosity. Now, we want equity in Buddhism. So fairness, doesn't matter if you're a girl or a boy, gay, old, young, sort of Asian or Caucasian, we're all Asians, as I keep on saying. Doesn't matter who you are, where you're from or what you are, even what religion. Oh, I'm just going to put this story in. Somebody told me a great story this morning, or this afternoon. Nothing to do with generosity, but it just shows you just how open Buddhism is. Now, this young man who's here this evening said that his family are Catholic, and his brother was going for some confirmation or some ceremony or whatever. So, you know, even though he comes here, and I don't know if he's a Buddhist or not, I don't really care, but he comes here regularly, he said he was going to like support or sponsor his brother. So he had to go to the church, the Catholic church, and apparently before he could be the sponsor, he had to go to confession. So he went into the booth there, and he found the priest doing the confession was reading a book. Ajahn Brahm's opening the door of your heart. That's really good, I like that. What a great story that is. So isn't it wonderful, all these teachings, don't care whether you're a sort of a Muslim, a Christian, or a Buddhist, or a Jew, because truth, beauty, generosity, kindness, no one has the franchise on that. We all own it, whether no matter what religion, or what race, or what gender specification you are. Those are things which are just open for everybody. So, but when we do these things, the nuns' monastery, how it started was, you know, we wanted equity, we wanted a nuns' monastery, we had a monks' monastery, so how can we get one? So we say, we advertise, we want a nuns' monastery, we're going to get one. And so we collected and collected about $20,000. You know how much land costs? And it stayed at that for a long time until, because the word was out, this man came to monastery down at Serpentine. And he said, I hear you're building a monastery for women. He said, yeah, we've only got a while yet, maybe 10 years, 20 years, who knows. And he said, he's a Westerner from Fremantle. He said, a few days ago, my wife gave birth to my first child, a daughter. This is my first child. I've got a daughter. I'm not sure whether she'd ever want to become a nun, but I want to give her that opportunity. And he wrote out a check for $250,000. Just like that. That was beautiful. And I don't think I've ever seen him again. I don't know where he's gone. But if he is here, and if he does know this, it's open there if your daughter ever wants to join. Any time. Those are the sorts of beautiful acts. And it doesn't matter how much it is or how small it is. I was telling this to one of my monks. It's one of those other stories of kindness which still inspires me. You know, these are the things I remember forever. And these are the things which I have tried to emulate in my life. This was when I was a monk in Thailand. And in these villages in the northeast of Thailand, you know, the Ubon province, which is, not many people would go up to that area because it was flat, there was no mountains, it was just very desolate and bad soil. And it was very close to where the border of Cambodia and Laos meets Thailand, in that little pocket there. And it was living in the outback, in the village life, not close to the city. But one thing I noticed in the village, there was one girl who was brain damaged from birth. And she couldn't speak. All she could do was to grunt. But even though that if she was in sort of Australia, she'd be put in an institution. But in the village life, not only was she cared for, but she was part of things. Girls of her age, even though they were dressed up looking for the boys, they would take her as well. To every function, every party, she would always go with her friends. She was part of things, she was part of life. And no one begrudged her their company, even though it was sometimes difficult and you could have as much fun as maybe without her, or maybe you did have more fun. They wanted her with them at all times. And so she was part of things. She was not excluded. She was not the other. And one of the interesting things which I noticed, because I had learnt Thai and Lao by this time, and this girl would grunt sometimes this way and that way, and her friends knew exactly what she was grunting about. It was a language, and everybody understood what she meant, not me, because they'd grown up with this girl. It was beautiful to see that she could express herself. But this one occasion, I was busy sweeping the hall. It's my job that day. And as I was sweeping, I was just behind a cupboard when I heard someone come into the hall. And I must admit, first of all, I said, what are they coming in this time for? Is it a thief or whatever? And I peered behind around the cupboard and saw it was this girl, the brain-damaged young girl, maybe about 15 or 16. She ran in, looked around. She never saw me. And she hurriedly went to the shrine in front of the big Buddha statue, put something down and bowed very quickly and ran away. I wanted to find out what she was up to. When I went to that shrine, I found there was a folded paper lotus. It wasn't a pretty lotus, because she was brain damaged. Other people, even kids, could probably make something much more beautiful materially. But when I found out, when I knew that was from this girl, and I knew this girl, I knew how hard it was for her to do this, and realized that she'd come in, trying to sneak in without any monk seeing her, because I'm sure she thought that her little lotus was not good enough for that shrine, and if any monk saw her, they would not let her come. Of course, we would let her come. And that lotus, it may not be as pretty as you could make, but it was one of the most beautiful gifts I'd ever seen. I almost cried at that time. I always get emotional when I tell that story. But when I knew what it was and where it came from, when I saw the monks come in for the next meeting, I told them, if any of you remove that lotus, oh, I'm going to be very upset with you. When I told them where it had come from, what it meant, they understood too. That was a beautiful act of generosity. Probably even more worthy than that man who'd written out the check for $250,000 for our nuns' monastery. It's not the amount, it's its beauty. Now this is what dana is, what generosity and what kindness is. It's just something you just want to do, and you just do it. Another act of generosity which almost made me cry, probably did make me cry, I think. It's all right to cry as a monk, out of inspiration, out of beauty. Sometimes it does hurt to you. It was when there was, first year I was here, actually it was, must be in the second year, because it was in this center here. I remember just being in that reception area, just one, I think it was a Saturday morning, and this Laotian girl came in, a refugee. She had come from the camps of Thailand, having fled the Vietnam War, and she came to see me. I knew her. She's still a very strong supporter, especially of the nuns' monastery now. And unfortunately, what had happened to her was in the camp in Thailand, the organizers of the camp had repatriated the whole family to Oregon in the United States, except for her, who was sent to Perth. There's some error of the paperwork that the family got separated. Now when you're a refugee, especially as an Asian, a family is really, really important. And there she arrived in Perth, and the rest of her family went to US. That was a tough one. But she was young, she got her act together, started working, but at this particular occasion she came to see me weeping. She just got telegram, remember the old telegrams, not the emails or faxes, the telegram from her brother in Oregon. Your mother is dying. Come quickly. There's not much time. She was crying because she was just 1 year in Perth, a refugee. She had no money for the airfare. She just could not afford it. She was going to lose her mother, who was about to die, without seeing her for the last time. And as she was crying and weeping, just behind her was another Thai lady who used to be a nurse, but because of a back injury, hadn't worked for a couple of years. She was trying to get compensation, but I don't think she ever got it. Out of work. I saw her, without saying anything, take out her checkbook and write a blank check and gave it to this Lao woman. Go and see your mum. You can fill in the amount later. They both cried. That's what dana is. There's something deeply spiritual and holy and beautiful in acts like that, of caring and giving and sharing. As for me, I've done many acts of dana in my life, of giving, and I love them. You may not know this, because many of you only know me as a monk, but you know, when I was a young man, I had long hair, and a beard too. I had what was known as a donut look. There was fuzzy hair all the way around. When that finished, my beard came, and I was peering through the middle of all this hair. And also, I had a motorbike. Anyway, when I was going to become a monk, not only did I have to shave off my hair and beard, I had to give up my motorbike. So I was trying to sell it. It was a friend of my mother's was interested in getting my bike. So he came to see my bike. He looked at it, liked it, and he said, "How much do you want for it?" And I said, "Let's go upstairs." We'll settle up upstairs where my mother was, because I wanted my mother around, as you will soon see. And then he said, "How much?" And I said, "Do you want it?" He said, "Yes, how much?" "It's for free, take it." And I will always remember the look on his face when he asked, "How much?" And I said, "Nothing, it's for free." It was a look of both shock and an opening of his heart. He told my mother afterwards that was the first time anyone had ever given him something substantial for free. It wasn't about money anymore. It was just kindness. Changed his life. He looked at my mother, and my mother said, "Don't worry about him, he's not crazy, he's going to become a monk." Without her, I don't know what he would have done. But there's a sort of wonderful little accent. You know, those little acts of kindness have given me so much happiness. Even now, 40 years later, that is the spiritual power of unforced, of just coming from the heart, just kindness and generosity. We just give, not expecting anything back in return, which is the most important part of giving. You know, in some temples, in some churches, in some monasteries, they ask people for donations. We don't do that in this place. There's no entry fee, and more importantly, there's no exit fee. You don't have to pay to get out of here. We don't charge for anything at all. We don't expect. But what we do encourage is kindness and generosity. And it's beautiful when that happens. However, sometimes it doesn't happen. Apparently, sort of, again, some people were a bit upset that at the retreat, at the retreat center, you know, we give this all for free, that sometimes people took the blankets and pillows from the rooms. I think, "Oh, what are you doing that for? This is all given to for free. It's not like a hotel where you've got to take these mementos. Even there it's pretty bad." And she said, "What should we do about this?" I said, "It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter how many people take this. I'm going to still, even myself, raise money, we replace it. Our job is just to give, and to give, and to give. If other people want to abuse that, I don't care, I'm going to still give. It doesn't matter how many people ask me for things, ask me for time. I'm going to give until I drop, until I die." Once I was in Singapore some years ago, and they took me to a temple, one of the Sri Lankan temples in Singapore, and they asked me, "Can you sign the visitor's book?" I said, "Yeah, sure." Unfortunately, I picked up the wrong book. It was a donation book. And I didn't notice until I put my name down and address, and then it said, "How much?" So I was in a bind. Because, you know, monks, we don't have any money. We've got nothing. No credit card, no check, no bank accounts, nothing. So I thought, "Gee, what should I do?" And they say, "You've got to be honest, Ajahn Brahm." So I wrote down how much to give. And I wrote down, MYLIFE, my life. And I meant that. I give my life to the temples, to Buddhism, to you guys, everything. That's a sort of generosity. Can you do that? It's beautiful if you can. Because otherwise, sometimes it gets just so miserable when our poor Buddhist society is worrying how they're going to pay their bills, or they've got all these lovely projects to do, like tomorrow at the Dana, at the Katina at Dhammasari. You know what they're raising funds for? Like a hall, a place where people can do meditation in there. If you've been there, they've got sort of a little cottage there for the nuns. They've got kutis. But they haven't got like a hall yet to do their ceremonies. This is for women and for men. A beautiful place. Costs a lot of money. When you die, wouldn't you want to say, wow, I helped, I gave, I actually built this? Unfortunately though, that sometimes our poor donation boxes are empty. If you go to Bodhinyana Monastery, we've got the smallest donation box in the whole world, I reckon. It's true, it's only about this big and that's big. Go and have a look at it. It reminds me of this story. I don't know if I when's the last time I told this story. Because part of the job we have to do is counselling, and you know, people get depressed these days and even suicides. You know that this was one of my favourite stories. It's a story of the suicidal spider. I usually tell this about once a year, so some of you may have heard this before. You know, once there was this spider. As soon as he was born and grew up and left his mum, he went to live by himself. And what do spiders do? They found a nice little room in a nice house in Perth, and they built a little web in the corner. Not a big web, just a modest-sized web, you know, your first house. He didn't get a grant, he had to do it himself. But as soon as he was finished, he really put a lot of care and love into the building, as you do when you sort of, you know, build your little home or your nest. As soon as he was finished, he was sitting in the middle of it waiting for lunch to come, because that's your home and also your meal ticket as well, your web. He was sitting there just tired after all his hard work and waiting. And the owner of the house came, saw that web, and with a broom, smashed it to bits. Just like earthquake. You know, so the tragedies in Samoa and in Sumatra, that happened to the spider. But there was no Red Cross to help him. He just had to run for his life. And he did. He managed to escape. He went to the house next door. Found a nice room there and made a second web. When he was finished, he still hadn't had anything to eat yet. Someone saw the web. Smash! And destroyed it. And again he had to run. A third house, a fourth house, a fifth house it happened. And after about six houses and six webs, he thought, that's it. What's the point? What's the point of making another web when just someone's going to come and destroy it? And I'm not doing any harm. You know, I'm actually collecting all your bugs for you and recycling them. I'm not doing any harm. Why is it that people don't love spiders? No one likes me. No one loves me. I'm so lonely and hungry. I haven't ate for days. And he got so depressed, he walked out trying to kill himself. Suicidal spider. He deliberately tried to walk under people's feet. But he always fell in that place between the heel and the sole. He tried to cross the road, but he always was between the wheels and never underneath them. Couldn't do anything right. And when you're depressed, you just can't do anything. You are just crawling down the road, crying. The suicidal spider. And as he was walking down, he passed a fat spider. There was a fat spider just outside a building, sunning himself, just like in a beautiful day, well not today, but yesterday, sunning himself in the beautiful sunshine. And he was a fat spider too. And he had this big smile on his face. And when the fat spider saw the suicidal spider, and just out of compassion, he said, "What's wrong with you? Why are you crying?" And the suicidal spider told his story, so sad. And the fat spider said, "Look, why don't you come and stay with me? There's plenty to eat where I live." And the suicidal spider looked at his side, he was fat and jolly. And he couldn't figure out, why? Didn't that happen to you when you sort of built a nest, built a web? Didn't somebody destroy your web? He said, no. I built one web in my life and it's still there to this day. And I've caught lots and lots of insects. "I can't understand this," said suicidal spider. "Where can you build a web in Perth where no one ever disturbs you?" And the fat spider said, "In the donation box of Dhammaloka Buddhist Centre." "No one ever will disturb you." "But that's not true. You're already generous and kind." But there's something deep about that sort of act of dana and generosity, because this is part of Buddhism. Those people who have been born as Buddhists grow up with it. And they give food to the monks every day. And I never understood that. When I became a monk, you used to go on alms round every morning, and people would be waiting for you to put food in your bowl. And it was only about after 1 week or 2 weeks, we were invited to somebody's house. We never needed to go on alms round. And I thought, wow, the villagers will be very happy today. They don't have an extra mouth to feed. Well, that afternoon, the headman of the village came to see us to say sorry. We asked, "What are you saying sorry for?" He said, "We must have done something wrong. You never came in the morning to get your food. They missed us. And they thought that they'd done some mistake and offended us, that we didn't come for the alms round." Then I realized something very important. Just how beautiful and how happy it is to give and to share with others. They missed us. It wasn't as if they felt obliged to fill our alms bowls with food. They loved doing it. That's why now, those of you who've never been to our monasteries, go there one day and see how much food is brought to the monks and nuns. Beautiful food. And then you ask the people who get up so early in the morning and cook the very best. And it is the very best. I remember some husbands complaining to me, "My wife never cooks like that for me." Awesome. Why do you do that? And you get the answer, for love, for happiness. There's something very beautiful in giving, especially to beautiful people, spiritual nuns, monks, who are serving and helping. You get this huge boost of happiness back. I know that, because I did that when I was a young man. Give food to the monks in the Thai temple in London, give donations for them. But I didn't really understand it at the time, until now you understand. Just, this is some connection from your heart to someone else. It's a letting go, it's a lack of selfishness, self-centeredness, me, mine and all of that. It's just being part of something much bigger than you. In our world, how often do we say just how terribly materialistic this world is? And how people worry about the economy, how they worry about the stock market, how they worry about the price of this and the price of that and the cost of things, and are we in recession or are we in boom times? And in this temple, in the monasteries, that doesn't count. We have another system there, and that system is a system of dana, kindness, love, I use that word love and kindness, because don't you ever notice that if you love someone, how can you express that love? You can always say, I love you, I care for you. But you always say it usually with a gift. Giving is actually part, an essential part from, I don't know, time immemorial, of the way we express our fondness and care for other people. Which is why some people get hurt, you know, when they only give $3 for the calendar. Because what we feel is, you're not caring, you're not loving. But when we actually love, we look at that person, we just see not how little, but how much we can give. We just go out of our way to try and find something, something special, something just to show how much we're connected to that person, with kindness, with love. So the generosity is an expression of a person's love. That's why when you see it, when a person just gives a huge check because they love their child, when they give just an ordinary looking folded piece of paper pretending to be a lotus, but they do it out of love, then it becomes something very special, moving, wonderful and inspiring. It gets at the very heart of what we're here on this planet for. Not to amass material things, but to amass this spiritual power, this energy of kindness, generosity, love, selflessness. But to do that, it has to be a special kind of generosity. It is, as I mentioned a little bit earlier, the generosity which expects nothing back in return. Sometimes people give you a donation and they want their name put on the board. They give a Buddha statue and they want their name given on it. Given by Mr. Smith. That is not generosity. That is buying advertising rights. So you notice in this temple, you don't know who the people are who actually pay for this place. It may be you, but you don't tell anybody. But you'll find in your heart, wow, I feel so good. So we don't advertise at all, simply because that is demeaning this beautiful movement of the heart towards sharing and loving and being part of the spiritual highway to enlightenment. Those people who are self-centered, see how much they can get. They just don't get it. They're missing the point. You can come here. You don't have to be a member. You don't have to pay any dues. You don't have to do anything, and you're still loved and cared for. But again, you're missing this wonderful opportunity to serve and make this place even more powerful for more people. Where we have this beautiful idea of being able to give, expecting nothing back in return, it just translates into our whole life. You know what it's like sometimes when you help someone? How many of you get disappointed? I gave them so much and they never even say thank you. Again, you're missing the point. You're not giving or helping someone to get a thank you out of them. If you are, it's just another type of business. You're giving, not expecting anything back in return at all. Now that's giving. For those of you who've had children, you just love giving to them. You don't expect anything back in return. You just want to give to your kids. I remember my dear old grandmother. I would go to her house in the afternoon and she would make me chips at any time of the day. bad for my health. My mother was really angry at her, but I love my gran for that. Isn't that what a grandmother is? If you want chips, you get chips. Now the reason I loved that, it wasn't the chips, it was this beautiful unconditional love which my grandmother gave me. Because it wasn't her job to train me and look after, that's my mother's job. Her job was just to love. And that's something which I always remember. Just giving, not expecting anything back in return. And because she never expected anything back in return, I'd do anything for her. The same with you. You give, not expecting anything back in return. You do that just for love, it's just the thing you do. Every morning, little Nito will say this is true. Every morning when I have my breakfast, I have some little porridge with some milk. Actually, the last couple of mornings it hasn't happened, but when the cat comes up and stands in front of me, it gets my milk. I'd rather the cat drink the milk than me. You get much more fun, much more joy sharing your breakfast with the cat than eating yourself. It's true, isn't it? You may have cats or dogs or kids or friends. You get much more fun out of that. Why? Because this beautiful opening of the heart to another being, being kind, being generous, giving them dana. As monks we do that all the time, we take it for granted. We don't care about how much we got, how much we haven't got. It's how much we can give. That's what we think. So really, when you look upon an economy, it's not just how much we earn defines us as rich, it's just how much we give defines us as rich, spiritually rich. It's not how much we have, but how much we've given away. At the end of your life, when you die, that's what will be counted. Not how much you've earned, but how much you've shared. How much you've loved, rather than how much you've collected. This is the currency of spiritual life. There's a few times when people have these near-death experiences. They're beautiful beings because they've shared so much. And all these people who have come back because they have been revived. They come back to live another few years, or 10 or 20 years after having these near-death experiences, you know, going towards the light and stuff. They all come back understanding what's important in life. The relationships, the sharing. They dedicate their lives to some sort of charity, to some sort of service. They just give and give and give. Not just their money, their life, their time, their energy. And also, when you know how to give, you also have that other type of giving, forgiving. It's no accident that those two words are close together. Because when you can share, when you can give, you don't expect anything back in return. Then you can forgive people who have hurt you. You don't expect justice, which is getting something back. You just give. And forgive. Have this beautiful generosity of the heart, which can allow other people to make mistakes, even mistakes which cause pain. This beautiful openness. When you have that softness of the heart, you find it never gets bruised. When you have a hardness of the heart, when you're brittle, the smallest thing can cause a crack in you, can hurt. That's why the softness of the heart makes you kind of invulnerable. The hardness of the heart just causes you too much pain. So, why can't we have this generosity of spirit to say, I forgive. I don't agree, but I forgive. It's a wonderful thing when that happens. You're actually giving a beautiful gift to somebody else. Just before I came in, a gentleman asked that sometimes I see these Buddha statues. with the hand raised up like this, just like a policeman at a crossroads. They say, what does it mean? Now those of you who know your Buddhist traditions know this is called the Abhaya Mudra, which means the position of offering fearlessness to other beings. It's one of the gifts which especially a monk or a nun, or especially a Buddha, can give others, saying, you don't need to fear me. That's the reason why, if you go to monasteries like Bodhinyana and Dharmasala, you see all the animals having no fear of the monks and you. See the kangaroos, they just look at you and carry on munching. They don't run away. Why? Because one of the generous acts which we've given them is the gift of fearlessness. Kangaroos, possums, echidnas, all the other beings which live in that forest do not need to fear. That is a beautiful gift which we can give to other people, the gift of fearlessness. And that's what that symbol means, the open hand. You do not need to live in fear. Wouldn't that be a wonderful thing to give to more people in this world? We can walk on the streets fearless. We can mingle with people of other religions and faiths and cultures fearless. That we could even have relationships where we test out whether we can get on without fear. So we can open up our vulnerability to the other person, knowing that they will treat us gently as we will treat them gently. We don't have to have fear of making a connection between another person. What a wonderful thing that is, to give the gift of fearlessness. Some of the kids now, in a couple of weeks' time, will be doing their TE examinations. I don't know how many kids are afraid that maybe they may fail. By failing, I mean not doing as well as their mother and father hopes, or how much they hope. Please give your children the gift of fearlessness at this time by saying to your children in the stress of examinations, son, daughter, whatever your score is, the door of my heart will always be open to you. You're my son, you're my daughter. That's, I love you so much anyway. It doesn't matter what you do. We want you to do well, but you don't have to do well in order to be loved and cared for. If you give even your children such a gift of fearlessness at this time, what a wonderful thing that is. Remember how terrified people are of such examinations and so many other things in life. We can actually give that generous act of fearlessness to other people and other beings in this world. So we don't need to feel so tense. How many times have you felt afraid today about what somebody might say or do to you? What might happen in the future? Have you been afraid that the biopsy results are coming tomorrow or whatever? Actually, they don't come on Saturdays, do they? Don't be afraid. One of the gifts of the Buddha, of the Dharma, is again fearlessness. So you get a cancer, and nothing to be afraid of. You can turn into something very, very beautiful, as I've taught here many times before. You get a disappointment in life, a breakup in a relationship. Don't be afraid. Because the way of understanding life, of looking at life, you don't have to be afraid of anything. You can make use of anything in life, having this beautiful understanding of the generosity of spirit, which can open itself up to life, fearless, to all the different ramifications of life, knowing that there'll be people there to hold your hand and look after you, your friends and loved ones. That's the currency of spirituality, which we're trying to give to one another, to care for one another. So with that forgiveness and that fearlessness, you find that even when you sit cross-legged, you've got no fear of what might happen. You just give your whole awareness to this moment, expecting nothing back in return. The beautiful generosity of deep meditation. But some of you who go on a meditation retreat and thinking 9 days, I want this, 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 that and that. At the very least, I want to become so one. That's the Sri Lankan word for being a stream winner. And if you are coming to the temple, practicing meditation, listening to these Dharma talks to try and get something out of it, you've missed the point again. One of the great teachings of my master Ajahn Chah, this is one of those one-liners he was so good at. He said, Ajahn Brahm, you meditate to let go of things, not to get things. You don't meditate to attain something. You meditate to abandon things. Not to get, but to give. That's a beautiful little saying. And when I understood that, I meditate to give my life, not to get this attainment or that attainment. That's why I can happily spend a morning, a couple of hours, in the male toilet of Jhana Grove Retreat Center, digging out the sand, while all the other people are in there watching their breath, happily doing that, knowing I am meditating. I am letting go. I am giving up, letting go, abandoning, expecting nothing back in return, except maybe a toilet which works. That's generosity. So dana, just go in there and empty your wallets. Why not try it? Go and write out a check to Ajahn Wayama, blank. Sister, put what you want in there. It'll be an act of dana you will never forget and you'll never regret. How many of you got the courage to do that? If you do that to me, I'll probably write down $1. And I won't cash it. I'll probably keep it. And I'll put it on a wall and say, this is what we mean by dana. Okay, do you get the point? It's not what you get, it's what you can give. How you can share, how you can love. That's what this generosity is all about. So, we're testing you out in the next couple of days. Okay, thank you very much for the talk. For the listening, rather. Okay, who's got any questions about tonight's talk? Beautifully, yes, there is. Actually, it's still a little blocked, so I can still have the opportunity to unblock it again. So yes, there is life afterwards. Because we got things go round and round, reincarnation. So the sand in the bottom of the toilet goes back there again. So that's what happens. Yes, there is life after the toilet. Anyone got any other comments or questions for this evening? Okay, so please be kind to one another. Share with each other. Just give to your friends, give to your loved ones, give to the temples, give to the Red Cross, whoever, give to the mosque or the church or whatever. Be kind. And then you know the meaning of life.